Reading from Canto 3, Chapter 1, Text 18.
Sureshu punyo pavanadri kunjeshu apankato yeshu sarit sahar sarashu ananta lingaye samalankriteshu Chachara Tirtha Yanatesh Ananyaha. Sampureshu. Holy places like Ayodhya, Dvaraka, and Mathura. Punya. Piety. Upavana. The air. Adri. Hill. Kunjeshu. In the orchards. Apanka, without sin. Toyeshu, in the water. Sarit, river. Sarashu, lakes. Ananta lingai, the forms of the unlimited. Samalankriteshu, being so decorated. Chachara, executed. Tirtha, places of pilgrimage. Ayataneshu, holy lands. Ananyaha, alone or seeing Krishna alone. Translation. He began to travel alone, thinking only of Krishna. Through various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwarka, and Mathura. He traveled where the air, hill, orchard, river, and lake are all pure and sinless, and where the forms of the unlimited decorate the temples. Thus he performed the pilgrim's progress. Purport. These Arsha forms of the Lord may be considered idols by the atheists, but that does not matter for persons like Vidura or his many other servants. The forms of the Lord are mentioned here as Ananta Linga. Such forms of the Lord have unlimited potency, the same as that of the Lord Himself. There's no difference between the potencies of the Arsha and those of the personal forms of the Lord. The example of the postbox and post office may be applied here. The little postboxes distributed all over the city have the same potency as the postal system in general. The duty of the post office is to carry letters from one place to another. If one puts letters in post boxes authorized by the general post office, the function of carrying letters is performed without a doubt. Similarly, the Archa Murti can also deliver the same unlimited potency of the Lord as when he is personally present. Vidura, therefore, could see nothing but Krishna in the different Archa forms. And ultimately, he was able to realize Krishna alone and nothing else. Translation, he began to travel alone, thinking only of Krishna. Through various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwarka, and Mathura, he traveled where the air, hill, orchard, river, and lake are all pure and sinless, and where the forms of the unlimited decorate the temples. Thus he performed the pilgrim's progress. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnanjana Sharakya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girin Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here we are reading that Vidura, he has started his journey. He's traveling to the various places of pilgrimage. in order to purify himself. In order to purify himself so he can serve the Lord personally, because he felt himself to be contaminated because of Duryodhan and Dhritarashtra's association. So he considered that he had lost his piety, and therefore to gain his piety, he wanted to travel all over India, the various pilgrimage places. And today we are hearing that he is traveling alone. Could I get a Bhagavad Gita, Prabhu? So in the Krishna mentions that that a duty of a sannyasi is that they are abhay, they are fearless, and they travel alone. Thank you, Prabhu. So that a sannyasi, Vidura was not a sannyasi, right? Renounced, yeah. So more or less sannyas. Okay. So a sannyasi, Krishna mentions in the 16th chapter, the qualities, the divine and demoniac natures. And there he mentions, abhayam sattva samshuddhir. So abhayam means fearlessness. Sattva samshuddhi, purification of one's existence. So a sannyasi is meant to be fearless, because they understand that the Supreme Lord in His Paramatma feature is situated within the heart. And therefore, they are fearless and they travel all over the... They travel alone. So, and they take shelter of the Lord. So traditionally, they would travel in the forest alone. They would be in the forest living a very austere life by themselves. A forest is a very dangerous place. There's wild animals. It gets very dark at night. So it is a very fearful place. Even the forest today, if you go, it's pitch dark. It's very fearful. You don't know what will happen. But because someone in that ashram is meant to be very renounced, and they need to be fearless. That's the quality of a sannyasi. So here we are seeing that Vidura is traveling alone. So when we are alone, naturally the dependence on the Lord is much higher. If there's no one to protect us, then if someone is advanced, they will take shelter of the Lord. So generally people, they take shelter of society, their friends, the government, this and that. And that's how we protect ourselves. But someone like a sannyasi, we see even in modern day, sannyasis, they travel alone. Even in modern day ISKCON. We have so many sannyasis and they travel by themselves. They stay for 2 or 3 days in one place or a week. And then they're off to the next place. But the principle is still the same, that they travel alone depending on the Lord for their sustenance. Whatever they get, they accept it. And they preach. So the duty of a sannyasi is to preach Krishna consciousness and guide specifically the grihasthas, and because they are the majority in society. And to guide and to inspire others. So here, Vidura, he came to Hastinapur to preach to his brother. We heard in the first canto. And here, he's traveling to various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwarka, and Mathura. So these are some names given here. He's traveling through these places. And these are not ordinary places. Ayodhya, Dwarka, and Mathura, these are transcendental abodes of the Lord. So these abodes are manifest in the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is 3/4 of the creation of God, 3/4 of the creation, 3-pad vibhuti. Then there's the ekapad vibhuti, which is the 1/4 creation is the material world. So in the spiritual world, these realms are also there. And they are manifested in the material world also, when the Lord descends. So Krishna descends with his abode, just like an important person. When Barack Obama, he came to Australia, the president of the US, a whole entourage came with him. His Air Force One came, and his, you know, his cars came, whatever they call. He had these special cars, and then so many soldiers came, Secret Service, and they brought so much paraphernalia and huge security arrangement, because his whole office is there in Air Force One, and he has the special helicopters. So when Krishna descends in this world, he brings his whole abode. So then Krishna brings his dham here. So the Vrindavan dham is here, Mayapur dham is here, Mathura dham is here, Dwarka and Ayodhya. So these realms are also there in the spiritual world. So Golok dham is the highest. You know, there's that outside the temple shop, there's a big poster that shows the spiritual and material creation in detail. So there's Golok dham, which is the highest and most sweetest. So in Golok dham, no one thinks Krishna is God. So everyone takes Krishna as their friend, as their lover, as their child. And then there's no awe and reverence in Golok dham. So there's just fun. They're just having fun. Krishna is playing with his friends and he's engaging in loving pastimes. So Lord Brahma, he describes the Golok dham in his prayers in the Brahma Samhita. There are many prayers. Golok dhamni, and so on. Then there is Mathura dham. So in Mathura dham, there is a little bit of awe and reverence. So we see example of Mathura dham is in the material world also. So Devaki and Vasudev, they reside in Mathura. So they know that Krishna is God, but at the same time they forget also. Sometimes they forget and they remember. So we see the Vasudev and Devaki, they had the realization that Krishna is the Supreme Lord after Krishna had killed Kamsa in the arena, in the wrestling arena. Kamsa was killed. So Krishna had killed the elephant Kuvalaya Pira, and then Krishna and Balaram killed the elephant, and then they were carrying the tusks of the elephant, and there was blood on their body, and they looked very beautiful. And they came to the arena, and there they saw there Chanura and Mushtika, the big wrestlers, they were waiting for them. So they were huge wrestlers, and Krishna and Balaram, in comparison, they looked a bit small. So anyway, there was a whole fight there, and they got defeated. And then Kamsa ordered that Nanda Maharaj be killed, members of his family be killed, because Kamsa was furious that they killed Chanura, Mushtika, they killed Kuvalaya Pida. And though the people were saying the match is not fair, so because they are so big and they are little boys. So anyway, they got killed, and then because Kamsa, he committed this offense of he wanted to kill Krishna's father, Vasudev, Devaki, everyone. So then Krishna got very angry, and he threw Kamsa off his pulled him out of his throne and threw him on the arena. And then he punched him and he killed him. So after all that was done and they were victorious, then Devaki and Vasudev, they realized that Krishna is actually God. And the relationship changed from one of a parent to one of awe and reverence. And then Krishna had to cover them by his yoga maya potency to make them forget that he's God, so they can have an intimate relationship with them. So we see in Mathura it is like that. So there's awe and reverence is mixed with intimate, with intense loving pastimes. Then in Dwarka there's more awe and reverence. And Ayodhya there's more. It's like that. So these realms are also here in the material world. So these are non-different from the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, here it's called Gokul,
dham, and the spiritual world is called Golok dham, but it's the same thing. So these realms are there and they're here. So Krishna, he manifests these dhams here to give us an opportunity to visit them and get purified. That's why Krishna manifests. So these dhams are a window to the spiritual world. So we can go there and take and get benefited. That's why Krishna manifests them. So here we are seeing Vidura. He's going to these various holy places to become Krishna conscious, to become even more Krishna conscious. So we are so fortunate that we can go there. And Prabhupada encouraged us to go there as often as possible. In fact, it is one of the items of bhakti mentioned in the Nectar Devotion that one should reside in the holy dham. So this temple is also a holy dham. This is Vrindavan dham. Outside there's a poster there which says, Prabhupada said right here that this is Vrindavan because all the activities are for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, this is Vrindavan dham. But at the same time, he even encouraged all of us to go to the holy dham. And there was this first Mayapur festival. Prabhupada invited all his disciples from all over the world to come to the Mayapur festival, the Gaur Purnim festival. So that was an historic event when devotees from all over the world went. And we see today that these festivals are growing every year. So this year I was at Mayapur and I could not even enter the temple for, wasn't even Gaur Purnim. It was the Maha Abhishek of the Panchatattva. And it was extremely difficult to enter. And devotees were queuing up from Mangal Arati time. And they would not leave the temple, though the managers were asking them to leave so they can decorate, but they didn't want to leave. So they had a very strong desire to sit there and watch the Abhishek. So we are seeing that these dhams are there for us to go there, to absorb our consciousness in Krishna and to hear from devotees. So dhams are not tourist places. So sometimes even devotees have the tendency to go to the dham and visit as many pastime places as possible, but not hearing from the advanced Vaishnavas. So when we go to the dham, there is opportunity to hear from advanced devotees who reside in the dham. ISKCON has so many advanced devotees in Vrindavan, Mayapur. We can go there and listen from them. Mayapur offers so many seminars, courses. So this is association of devotees. But sometimes the tendency is we have 3 days in the dham, and 3 days we go from morning to evening, go to all the places, but not take association of the devotees. So holy dham is a place where we can chant more rounds, maybe 32 rounds a day, and absorb ourselves in the Shastra and the holy name and in doing some service and hearing from devotees. So that's what the mood should be in approaching the holy dham. Otherwise one does not get so much benefit. Because we are on the material platform. And when we go to all these pastime places, we just see them from a material point of view. We cannot really penetrate that place. So it is said that one cannot go to Vrindavan simply by buying a ticket. One has to be in the right consciousness to go to Vrindavan or Mayapur. So here Vidura, he's thinking of Krishna. It is said that he began to travel alone thinking only of Krishna. So that is the consciousness in which to go to the holy dhams. One has to be Krishna conscious. One cannot just purchase a ticket from Gaura Travels or somewhere else, Oman Travels or whatever, and just take a taxi and you're there, you are in Vrindavan and you put your luggage down. No, we'll just see the externals. So we see that if we go to the dham, if we are in a materialistic consciousness, we won't be able to appreciate the dham because the holy dhams have a covering, a thin covering of maya to delude those who are not serious in Krishna consciousness, to delude the materialistic people, so they don't reside over there and commit offenses. So if you look at Mayapur and Vrindavan externally, they don't match the description which is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that there is kalpa vrikshas, there are desire trees. Chintamani prakara sadmasu kalpa vriksha laksha vriteshu surabhira vipalayantam lakshmi sahasra shatasambrama sevyamanam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. So in the spiritual world, the palaces are made out of touchstone, chintamani. And there is kalpa vrikshas, there is desire trees. Whatever you ask, the trees will give it to you. If you want mango, it will supply you an unlimited quantity of mango, or whatever you desire. But in Vrindavan, you don't see all that. At least externally, we don't see that. You don't even find any trees these days. What to speak of finding desire trees? You can't see any peacocks. So if you read description of Vrindavan, there is, vana means forest. So there's 9 forests? 12. 12 forests. So Kadiravan, Vrindavan, Mahavan, Talavan, Madhuvan, Kamyavan, Vandirvan, Vrindavan. So there are 12 forests, and today there's no forest there, and the Yamuna is polluted. Yamuna water is all sewage water from Delhi. So only 3% is the river water coming from the Himalayas. 97% is sewage coming from Delhi, unfortunately. So if you go to Vrindavan, then it doesn't match the description. All the kunds are polluted, there's open sewers everywhere, and there's pigs rotting there, and there's dog fights, and there's monkeys. Monkeys are there, which are mentioned, but there's plenty of dogs also. And there's wars going on, dog wars. If you're there at the wrong time, you're in trouble, especially early hours. So, but the point is, if one is thinking of Krishna, one is Krishna conscious, one's mind is absorbed in Krishna, then one will perceive the dham. One can enter the dham. And one can begin to see the pages of the Bhagavatam. But otherwise, this covering is there to delude the materialists and to delude those who are not serious. So they don't go and reside there and commit offenses. So Vrindavan is really for devotees. Same with Mayapur. So the qualification is that one has to think of the Supreme Lord. So we see Akrura, when he was sent by Kamsa, he was deputed by Kamsa to go to Vrindavan and get Krishna and Balram to Mathura. So he wanted to kill them to fight in the arena. So when Akrura went there, he was fully Krishna conscious, like Vidura. He was thinking of the pastimes of the Lord, he was thinking of the form of the Lord. And when he reached the outskirts of Vrindavan, he got off his chariot and he saw the Krishna's footprints in the dust of Vrindavan, and he rolled on the ground. He rolled in the dust, and he manifested the symptoms of ecstasy. And in that consciousness, he went to Vrindavan. And he was meditating, then, I will go there, I'll see the Supreme Lord, and he'll put his hand over me. So, and that's what happened. So he went there, Krishna embraced him, and he was very Krishna conscious. So from these pastimes, we can learn how to absorb ourselves in devotional service and hearing about the Lord and approaching the Dham in that way. So it's mentioned, he traveled where the air, hill, orchard, river and lake are all pure and sinless. So interesting, it's mentioned the air, the hill, orchard, the river and lake are sinless, are pure and sinless. we even see in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Hamsa avatar, he's instructing Lord Brahma. So the four sons, the four mental sons of Brahma, mental not they were mental, but they were born from his mind. They were not mental in Krishna consciousness, but they were born from his mind. Brahma is very powerful. We get mental in all the time. But yeah, so they asked a question to Brahma that, how is it that the sense objects are always lodged in the mind, and the mind is always absorbed in objects of sense gratification. So how can one stop that? One who wants liberation, how can he stop that? So Brahma was bewildered. He didn't know the answer. And he meditated on the Lord, and the Supreme Lord manifested himself as a swan, as a Hamsa. And he instructed Lord Brahma. And then further on the instructions, he also begins to enlighten him on the three modes of nature. So there he says that everything is situated in the three modes. So if one should situate oneself in the mode of goodness in order to overcome the modes of passion and ignorance, which are very detrimental for our Krishna consciousness. And from the mode of goodness, one should go to pure goodness. So there he mentions that one should surround oneself or associate oneself with objects in the mode of goodness. So with activities in the mode of goodness, water in the mode of goodness, time in the mode of goodness, places in the mode of goodness, and like that. So here it's mentioned that, of course, in the dham everything is pure and sinless. So in the holy dham, the river is sinless because these rivers are sinless because pure devotees, they come and bathe in them. So the Ganga and the Yamuna by nature are transcendental rivers. These are not material rivers. So generally rivers are in the mode of goodness, when they're pure, when the water is clean and pure. But Yamuna and the Ganges are transcendental. We know the Ganges descended from the causal ocean. When the Supreme Lord, as Vamanadev, he took three steps. He asked for three paces of land. He asked for just enough land on which he can take three steps. And then Bali Maharaj said, I can give you the whole kingdom. Why you just want three paces? He said, three is enough, you know, otherwise I'll never be satisfied. Mm-hmm. Then he took three big steps. And with the second step, he pierced the covering of the universe. And the Ganges flowed from there. And Lord Shiva, he bore the brunt of the Ganges. So Lord Shiva took the force of the Ganges. And then the Ganges descends in the heavenly realm and then comes down. So in the heavenly realm, it's called by different names. On the earth, it's called Ganges.
Gangotri.
Yes, Gangotri. That's where it originated. And it's Bhagirathi. So the Ganges descended. So the Ganges is pure. It is pure. It is sinless. It is a transcendental river. And by bathing in it, one can get rid of one's sinful reactions. One can get cleansed of sinful reactions. And even in the Yamuna is even higher, because the Supreme Lord, he personally engaged, he personally bathed in the Yamuna, and he had so many pastimes in the Yamuna. So the Yamuna is even more glorious than the Ganges, and is even more purifying than the Ganges. So these rivers are sinless because devotees who carry the Lord in their heart, when they travel to these places, they ordinarily, when mundane people, they go to the holy dham, they go to the dham and they bathe in the Ganges or the Yamuna, and they get rid of their sins and they deposit them in the river. So that was also Ganga Devi's concern, that if I descend in the material world, my waters will be filled with sinful reactions by sinful people who will come and bathe in me. So then how do I overcome that? And then she was assured that pure devotees will come and bathe in your waters and they will neutralize the reactions. So that's why these rivers are sinless, because pure devotees, they go and bathe. So when we go, we can also get benefited. Okay, one last point. It's time is up. No, we should end here. So, are there any questions or comments? I do not want to speculate. I will not say anything. Karunanidhi Krishna Prabhu will be sending out an email, or it will be in your inbox, so you can open it and you can read about it. So, are there any other questions? Yes, Prabhuji. We should visit holy dhams. It's one of the injunctions in the Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada specifically said Mayapur, Vrindavan and Puri for devotees. But there doesn't say anywhere you can't visit the other dhams. If one has the time and facility, then yeah, why not? Go to Dvaraka. Go to Ayodhya. But at least Vrindavan, Mayapur and Puri, one should go as much as possible. So I don't know the details. It's on the same platform. I can't remember off my head, but I can let you know. I have some books which talk about it. Prabhuji, would you like to shed any light on that? Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.